A few weeks ago, I began a study within a study. That is, we are digging into the Gospel of Luke. And when we arrived at Luke chapter 15, we did a little mini-series within the series on this chapter. This is three of Jesus' greatest parables. So the first one was the lost sheep and the lost coin. And then last Sunday, I actually did the message on the prodigal or the lost son. And if you didn't hear that, that's actually up on the website. You could actually hear that if you missed it. And today we're going to cover about the elder son. Now the parable actually represents three different parties. It's really important to understand that. The father, of course, represents God the Father. So when you're looking at the father in the story, you're really getting a glimpse of how God feels from Jesus' perspective, trying to teach us something about our Father in heaven. When you look at the younger brother, it was representing the publicans. These were tax collectors, scum of the earth, prostitutes, the people who kept coming and following Jesus. The younger brother represents them. The older brother represented the Pharisees, the religious leaders, the people who looked very respectable on the outside, but yet on the inside had some real problems. So Jesus told the parable as a mirror, the way you would look in a mirror to see yourself. But this mirror is a mirror to see the inside of yourself, not just the outside. For a parable to make sense, you must know the context of the parable. And the context is really quite simple, and the context is actually told in the beginning of chapter 15. The context is this: the Pharisees, the group that represents the elder brother or is seen in the elder brother, they don't like Jesus. And they were complaining that Jesus was spending time with sinners, these bad people. He was even eating with them. And it was offensive to them. It was repulsive. So Jesus decided, because of this criticism from the Pharisees, he told these three parables. They all three have the same theme. They all tell us about God. They all tell us about ourselves. So let's begin today with a look at the elder brother. And we find that portion at beginning of verse number 25 through 32. Of Luke 15. Meanwhile, the older brother was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing, so he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in, so his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So when the news, the arrival of the brother, the younger brother, back home, comes to the older brother, his reaction immediately is one of anger, an explosive anger, which tells us it was a habit. And he's so angry that it's an out-of-control anger, one that he actually shows disrespect or even contempt. This is the automatic response of this kind of anger. It kind of comes, how could you have treated me like this? Look at verse 29, but he answered his father, "Look." Notice the exclamation mark there. I wish you could have heard him actually say this to his father and how he said it. It's absent all the respect and deference that his father deserves. This is the older brother who's always out in the field, always slaving, always working. And when he hears the younger brother's back, this is not good news to him, not at all. He's angry. He's angry at the younger brother, but he's also angry at the father, and he's very disrespectful, and his contempt is his dislike that his father is celebrating, because he comes to the celebration. He says, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Let me just say a word about disrespect. We live in an age where people are allowing their children to be disrespectful. It's a concept, it's a biblical concept of respect. You don't find respect because it falls out of a tree on you, or you every day you kind of pick it up out of the goodness of somebody's heart. No, it is a definite decision to teach respect, just like honesty, just like responsibility, just like accountability, just like humility. All of those biblical traits, they have to be taught, and parents have to teach. This is how you talk to an adult. This is how you do not talk to an adult. This is how you talk to your parents and your grandparents. This is how you talk to your teacher. This is how you don't talk to your teacher. Now, what do you think is the main reason we are seeing so much disrespect in children? Where are they learning it? Well, primarily, they're learning it from watching their parents be disrespectful to each other. So parents being disrespectful to each other can't expect anything different from their children. They're going to actually show the same disrespect to each other and then show it back to you, the parents. So we have to learn how important respect is. Let's move on to the anger that this young man had. Can you imagine if this older brother had been the first one to meet the younger brother? The father saw him when he was a long ways away. He ran to him, threw his arms around him, felt compassion for him, kissed him, wept over him. What if the older brother had met him? If they had said to him, if a servant had said, Master, isn't it wonderful your kid brother's home? And he looks like, you know, he's had a pretty rough time, but, you know, he looks like he's in good health. He would have met the younger brother and told him how unwelcome he was, especially coming back in this poverty-ridden condition. The least he could have had is shown a little respect to get a job somewhere and earn a little bit of money to help pay his keep. And when the elder brother hears there's a party or a celebration going on, he gets angry, and the word anger here has the kind of anger the way sap rises in a tree. We have that, a lot of it, because you see it on your car when you come out. But the sap rises right up through the trunk, through the limbs, and then it actually drips out. Well, this is that kind of anger that he actually has. It's an explosive anger. Explosive anger can be controlled, and it'll actually happen in front of other people, including your own kids, which is one of the most damaging things you can ever do, show anger, uncontrolled anger in front of your children. But where is this anger coming from? I doubt this elder brother had any serious, deliberate thought to try to figure it out. But if you just look at the story carefully, his anger is coming from his resentment. He says, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Look at the resentment in those words. Slaving? He feels unrewarded. He feels that there is no recognition. Now just think about it from his position for a minute. The younger brother cashed in on the inheritance. So he took a chunk of money, and he went and he squandered it in wealth. Now, I don't know if he spent it on prostitutes the way the older brother does, and I don't know how he knows that, but I'm sure he was prone to imagine that would be the only way this no-good-for-nothing brother would spend his money. But at any rate, he spent it. And he came back, and what did the father do? Reinstate him. So whatever was there was going to be belonging to him and the father. Now, this younger brother has wormed his way back in. So that's number one resentment. He doesn't deserve anything. He already spent all of his money. Does that make sense? It didn't make any sense to this older brother. You shouldn't be coming back here. You don't deserve anything. I'll tell you, the gospel doesn't make sense to a lot of people. That's why they can't forgive. People will go for years and years not forgiving someone because they don't deserve forgiveness. I'm just glad you're not in God's place, because none of us deserve forgiveness. The elder brother would never have forgiven the younger brother. Did you know that the younger brother was so lost, so far away from God, but the older brother was too? You don't have to leave the farm to be lost. What is the definition of lost here? Lost is away from the father. Remember the younger brother, when he's at the pig pen, he got his compass out, his spiritual compass, and he said, he's about to eat the slop the pigs are eating. I'm telling you, some of you people love bacon, but if you raise pigs like I did for a few years, you wouldn't love bacon so much. These pigs squeal, they stink, they love mud, they eat the most awful stuff. I understand why the Lord didn't want the Jews to eat pigs. So he was at the pig pen about to eat the slop, and he goes, what am I doing? I'm starving to death back in my father's house. The servants have an abundance of food, and here I am starving to death. That's when he realized he was lost. Augustine, who has written enormous amounts of material, he's one of the church fathers, very, very insightful man, writing on this proverb, he says, for it is not by our feet nor by change of place that we either turn from thee or to thee. It's in darkened affections lies the distance from thy face. You don't have to take a trip. You don't have to move far away like the prodigal to get away from God. Just let the darkened affections, that'll distance you from the face of the Father. The sins, Augustine says, the sins of the younger were sins of passion, but the sins of the elder were the sins of the attitude, the resentment, the jealousy, the anger. Those are all sins. They're all evident. The older brother was good on the outside, but something was missing. This may be what the little boy had in mind when he prayed, dear God, make all bad people good and all good people nice. I really like that, because I met a lot of good people that were just plain nasty. I never can figure that out, how really good, great Christians can be so mean. Because they're away from the Father. That's what happens. They can look so good, so respectable, like the elder, but they're right there close to God. They're in church. They're doing everything, but on the inside, it's monotony, tedious monotony, and they're resentful. He was resentful that his father had let himself be taken advantage of. He resented his father for not reserving him, and he certainly overestimated all of his work and his own rewards. Look at that again. I've been slaving for you. Never disobeyed your orders. When people use words like never, This is really far-fetched. Never, never. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate. What resentment. And he refused to go in. Verse 27, your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed the fattened calf, but he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. Now, Timothy Keller, I've mentioned him, and he has written a book called The Prodigal God. I highly recommend the book. Some people say, well, I'm not a reader. Well, this is a little tiny book like that. Just try it. For even you people who say that you don't even read, right? It's a wonderful book. I'm reading an excerpt from it. Why doesn't the elder brother go in? He himself gives the reason. Because I've never disobeyed you. The elder brother is not losing his father's love in spite of his goodness, but because of it. It's not his sins that create the barrier between him and his father. It's the pride he has in his moral record. It's not his wrongdoing, but his righteousness that is keeping him from sharing the feast with the father. These two sons are really very much alike. Far more than it appears. They both don't like the control of the father. They both are defiant. Both are rebellious. Both self-serving in their own way. What did the older son want most? If we think about it, we realize he wanted the same thing as his brother. He was just as resentful of the father as the younger. He too wanted the father's goods rather than the father himself. Now listen to that. He too wanted the father's goods rather than the father himself. He resented the younger wanting all that inheritance, but he himself actually wanted those goods, not the father. However, while the younger brother went far away, the elder brother stayed close and never disobeyed. That was his way to get control. His unspoken demand is, I never disobeyed you. Now you have to do things in my life the way I want them to be done. There is a play written by a man named Peter Schaeffer. It's in the book, the little book about the prodigal father. Peter Schaeffer wrote this book. It's about Mozart. It's a fiction play, but it's based on a lot of historical background of Mozart and his family. Mozart's middle name is Amandius. That's the name of the play. Amandius. Is Mozart, and his older brother is Salieri. So you have a younger brother and an older brother in this play. I begin with a prayer the elder brother is praying to God. Salieri prays this way. I would offer up secretly the proudest prayer a boy could think of. Lord, make me a great composer. Let me celebrate your glory through music. And be celebrated myself. Make me famous through the world, dear God. Make me immortal. After I die, let people speak my name forever with love for what I wrote. In return, I vow I will give you my chastity, my industry, my deepest humility every hour of my life. And I will help my fellow man all I can. Amen. So Salieri, the older brother of Mozart, begins a life under this vow to God. He keeps his hands off women, works diligently at music, teaches musicians for free, and tirelessly helps the poor. His career goes well, and he believes God is keeping his end of the bargain. Then Mozart appears with musical gifts far above Salieri's. His genius has obviously been bestowed on him by God. Amandius, Mozart's middle name, means beloved by God. And yet he is a vulgar, self-indulgent younger brother. The talent God lavished so prodigally on Mozart precipitates a crisis of faith in the elder brother of Salieri. His words are remarkably close to those of the older son in the parable. It is incomprehensible. Here I was denying all my natural lust in order to deserve God's gift, and there was Mozart indulging his in all directions and no rebuke at all. Finally, Salieri says to God, "From now on, we are enemies, you and I, and thereafter works to destroy Mozart." Very similar, because some of the same base emotions are there. Salieri's diligent efforts to be chaste and charitable were ultimately revealed to be profoundly self-interested. He was doing a lot of good works for the poor, but he was doing them for his benefit. He says, "I like myself till he came, Mozart." The minute he realized that his service to God and the poor wasn't gaining him any glory, he craved so deeply, his heart became murderous. Are you unhappy with God? I mean, just think about it for a moment. Just stop and just think. Is there some unhappiness deep down inside, some resentment of God? Does it seem like that he's been unfair to you? Could it be that we may be more like the elder brother than we'd like to admit? We are here serving you, God, and while others don't, their life seems to be blessed in so many different ways. But me, I'm here struggling away, not even recognized for what I do. It's called the elder brother mentality. The father had run to the younger brother. For the older brother, when he was told he was outside and the older brother refused to come in, the father goes outside to the older brother and he pleads with him to come in. Look at verse 28. The older brother became angry, refused to go in, so his father went out and pleaded with him. The father came to comfort him, but he wouldn't be comforted. Listen to this little story. It's going to make the point I want with which to end this. It's a little made-up story, but it's going to make the point of which I want to end with today. It says, "Once upon a time, there was a gardener who grew an enormous carrot. So he took it to his king and said, 'My lord, this is the greatest carrot I've ever grown or ever will grow. Therefore, I want to present it to you as a token of my love and respect for you.' The king was touched and discerned the man's heart, so he turned to go. But as he did, the king said, 'Wait, you are clearly a good steward of the earth. I own a plot of land right next to yours. I want to give it to you freely as a gift so you can garden it all.' And the gardener was amazed and delighted and went home rejoicing. But there was a nobleman at the king's court who overheard all this, and he said, 'My, if that is what you get for a carrot, what if you gave the king something better?' So the next day, the nobleman came before the king and was leading a handsome black stallion. He bowed low and said, 'My lord, I breed horses, and this is the greatest horse I've ever bred or ever will. Therefore, I want to present it to you as a token of my love and respect for you.' But the king discerned the heart and said, 'Thank you,' and took the horse and merely dismissed him. He saw the perplexion on the nobleman's face, so the king said, 'Let me explain. That gardener was giving me the carrot, but you were giving yourself the horse.'" When we need something for God, it's often very easy to be more interested in the gift than the giver. It's more easy to be interested in his power than his presence, than the miracle than the miracle worker. God wants us to love him. It's interesting that if we seek his presence, his power will come. If we love God with all of our hearts, he will meet our needs and provide for us. But we will be disappointed if we are fixated on the gifts, fixated on what he can do for us. We will end up angry and resentful and misunderstood and perplexed as the elder brother, feeling God has not recognized us, God has not rewarded us. He says to the elder brother, my son. Though the older brother had been very disrespectful to the father, not showing deference. Look, he says to the father. Notice how the father responds to the son, and the son hasn't changed his attitude. The disrespect, the contempt is there. The father says, but son. Beautiful, compassionate words coming from the father. But son. Hearing those words should have melted the elder brother's heart. The father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours, but we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. I want you to think for just a moment. Both of these boys were lost. The first one is reckless, immoral. He's a picture of so much of us and so much of the world. Defiant, self-absorbed, completely led by his passions, wasting his life away. And then suddenly there is this moment of coming to his senses and coming back in repentance. That's what sinners were doing all around Jesus. The very people that they couldn't stand, it was somehow getting through to them. But this elder brother was lost as well. So very, very lost. So close and yet so far away. It doesn't really matter if you are on the other side of the earth in the pig pen or whether you're 10 feet from the Father, if you're not in the feast, if you're not embracing the Father, if you're not drawn to him, you're lost. He hasn't moved away from you. You've moved away from him. Listen to these words, and may they really sink deep in your heart, what the Father says in verse 31, my son, the Father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. The elder brother was worried about what he had not received. And the Father says, everything I have is yours. There's so much that is resolved in our hearts when we find our contentment in God. We were singing that song today, the heart of my contentment is you. Your heart resolves so many issues when you see God as your greatest possession. That's what Paul said to the Philippians. I have learned to forget so many things in my past. And Paul said, I have one of the most despicable pasts. In fact, he said, I am the worst of all sinners. Now, I don't know how he knew that, but he felt that he was bad enough to at least claim the title. And then he says to the Philippians, I have learned one thing. The guy who wrote half the New Testament, if he says, I've learned really one thing, I'd like to really know what it is. And he says, here it is. I have been able to forget my past and let it go. And I have also learned that I haven't made it, but I am reaching forward every day toward the prize. And what is the prize that he mentioned? It's none of the gifts. It's none of the possessions. It's Jesus. That's the prize. When you make Jesus the prize of your life, so much of your life accommodates itself. If something else gets in the focus or the crosshairs, you will be disgruntled, you'll be unhappy, you'll be discontented, you'll be angry, you'll be resentful. But when Jesus gets in there, your life starts accommodating. And when Paul, in 2 Timothy, he's at the end of his life, he says, I have finished my course. I've run the race. I've fought this battle. I'm going home now. Words of triumph, words of courage, words of victory. But this is a guy who isn't, all right, call all of your staff in here. I want you guys to make sure you pay back for all those people. Pay back for those people. There's no vengeance here. There's no hatred. There's no jealousy. God has a way of taking care of that in us. If we had to worry about getting even with all the people who have taken advantage of us or trying to get back at all the people, we waste all of the gifts and all the energy God has given to us. It's all yours. Everything I have is yours already. You just don't live like it. You don't understand it. Come into the feast. Why do you want to stay out there? Come in. Come into the feast, son. There's so many things we don't understand in this Christian life. Believe me, from a pastor's point of view, if you've been a pastor for 3 weeks, and I've been a whole lot more than that, there's so much hurt, so much offense. People say things to you. They do everything under the sun. They spit on you. They kick on you. Not literally, all right? Don't write me about that. But they do it emotionally. You can't believe the stuff that people will do to you. If you let all of that get to you, you would quit. But if you did, it means you were doing it for them. But there's something about it when he is the one you're doing this for. The Lord has a way of healing those hurts and comforting those hurts, and he just moves them out of the way. He does bring in some wonderful people into your life who have the opposite gift of encouraging you and comforting you, and they know the right thing to say, and they know how to minister to you and help you. The secret is to come in to where the Father is. Don't live outside. Don't stay outside. Whatever you're angry about, whatever you're upset about, whatever you're hurt about, it ain't worth it. Come in.